You just went from exuberant to depressed in the time it takes for Boromir to die in the first movie.
Spoiler!
Oh, you've seen it. Aren't you excited?
I am.
It's not that. I take off the crown. So much detail went into it. All of the small ridges, the handmade stars.
Well, I'm not a mind reader, Sage adds impatiently.
It's just, I can't meet her gaze. I've never really had a friend before. I mean, I have, online, but not in person. Not in a long time, at least. So, we'll be friends after this, right? After the con? She puts her hands on her hips and tilts her head.
Now, what kind of question is that? Of course we will.
I finally look at her and drink up the only friend I've ever really had. Her chlorine green hair, her piercings, the way she stands, shoulders back, feet apart, how she can walk into every room and instantly be the coolest person in it. Thank you.
The costume was nothing. It was pretty easy, really.
I stretch out my arms and wrap them around her because she's just too badass to start a hug first. But she returns it. She returns it like the rib-crushing fiend she is. Even though the costume's done, we decide to finish Starfield. I think that maybe it won't be that bad watching it with someone else. Spoiler? It totally still is. Sage dabs at her eyes as the final credits roll and passes the tissue box to me. I tell her my theory, that the Black Nebula doesn't kill Princess Amara, but sends her away, like the Time Dragon does to Elphaba in Wicked.
That's a shitty consolation prize, Sage moans.
My cell phone buzzes. I dig it out of my pocket and swipe my thumb over the lock screen instinctively. I was wondering when he'd text me tonight.
The boy again?
She asks, dabbing at her mascara.
Yeah,
the boy. She sniffs and shakes off her tears, then turns to me with an eager look.
So what's the deal with him? How did you meet? You just tricked me into the worst snot fest in the history of me. I demand this as repayment.
She has a point. I fiddle with my phone. It started out as a wrong number, actually. Like, you know, those BuzzFeed articles where people text the wrong number while going into labor, and then these randos show up with diapers and baby formula, and they become besties?
No, but I'll take your word that it happened.
Yeah, so it's kind of like that. He just texted the wrong number. I think he was looking for my dad because I inherited his phone. But then we just kept talking, and...
So you legit don't know him?
She interrupts.
I do know him. Have you talked, though?
I hold up my brick phone.
How do you think we're communicating? Smoke signals?
She waves away my sarcasm.
No, I mean actually talked, like...
She holds her hand up like a phone.
Here's my number. Call me maybe talked.
I squirm. Not exactly. Sage rolls her eyes.
L, he could be a 60-year-old with a collection of American Girl dolls in his basement for all you know.
He isn't, I cry. He's our age. And besides, I like texting him. It feels more, I don't know, you've got maily. Sage stares at me quizzically like I'm a Nox who's just pledged allegiance to the Federation.
But haven't you, like, wondered?
I can't meet her gaze because the truth is, I have wondered what he sounds like, how he sounds, whether his words are laced with an accent or a lisp, deep or light or reedy or full. I shrug. He's never given me any clues that he wants to talk. What if he doesn't feel comfortable talking, or he's nervous about having a stutter or something?
What if he's waiting for you to call first, she argues.
Maybe, but, I mean... I don't even know his real name. She sits up, squints, scrutinizes me. I'm about to add that I at least know he isn't bald when she grabs my phone and in two quick steps reaches the other side of the room.
Hey, give it back!
She puts up a finger and lifts the phone to her ear.
Give me a sec. Panic surges in my chest. What are you doing?
Calling him.
Stop! I move so fast I don't even realize that I'm yanking the phone out of her hand until I've already done it. We both hear the ringing stop. Carmendor answers the phone.
Hello?
It's soft, deep, male. I slam end so fast I think I fracture my thumb. I shove my phone into my pocket so deep she'll never be able to get it. I glare at her. Happy now? Sage falls back on her beanbag laughing.
Oh my God, you were ninja fast!
Not funny.
You know I had to.
She sits up on her elbows and tilts her head.
He sounds nice, Elle.
I sit down beside her. Yeah?
Yep. Certifiably not axe murdery, she shrugs. At least I think so.
Well, thank God. I swallow the lump in my throat. I'm not sure how I'm going to explain this to Carmendor. He did sound nice, sweet, a voice I could listen to for hours, but would he ever want to listen to me? I glance down at my phone and suddenly my blood runs cold. Oh my God, I whisper and jerk up to my feet. Oh, shit. Sage glances over at me.
What?
It's 9:10. My hands start to shake. I stuff the cosplay uniform into my duffel bag and loop it over my shoulder. I'm so late, so late. Can you take me halfway home? Sage shambles to her feet and salutes.
I'll get you home faster than greased lightning.
With heart pounding, I fly up the stairs after her. We've worked too hard. The con is tomorrow. I can't ruin this now.
Darian. Last take, I think. Don't ruin it. And action, the director yells. The set plunges into deathly silence. The crew looks on. Then we're moving like a machine. Graceful, precise, well rehearsed. In the moment. The green screen fades. The boom disappears. The camera becomes a thought in the back of my mind. I step into Carmendor, at the helm of his ship, the good Prospero. I'm here, in command of my crew, and shit is about to go down. 42 clicks to the left, I bark to Yussi, and ignite! Aye, Calvin replies at the head of the bridge, his fingers twitching just enough to ease the ship to the left. And in that moment, he's not the jerk B-lister with a perpetual chip on his shoulder, but the Federation's best pilot, my best friend, and navigator of the Prospero. 3 Nox ships are coming in from our starboard, and we have 30% power left. There's no one else I'd trust to get us out of this mess. The helm of the Prospero goes quiet as we wait for the 3 red dots blinking on the screen to fall off. But they keep pursuing us toward the black nebula. It looms against us, the size of 3 suns, swirling, catching, inhaling everything, growing larger with each atom broken down and absorbed. The galaxy's only hope of stopping it is aboard this ship. Another torpedo slams into our back hull. Red lights flare across one of the screens. Yussi flicks it away. 4 clicks faster, I order. We're already shaking apart as it is, Yussi warns. If we get too close... I said 4 clicks! I snap. He twitches his head slightly. A throwback to the show's Yussi, who always tossed his head to the left whenever he knew Carmendor was wrong, but did as his captain commanded. A boom mic hovers above us, the gaping eye of 3 lenses staring from just off the bridge. One of them, on a pulley, draws closer. In front of me, the navigation panel glows like an oversized keyboard. Beside me, Princess Amara wrings her hands nervously.
Ablen,
Jess says, and the word fills me with a strange sort of longing. A reminder of L. I push it down. Not now. We can do this, I tell her. We have to. We're going to die. We're all going to die if you get closer. Another missile slams into the back of the Prospero, destroying one of the thrusters. The ship careens out of warp speed. Everyone is thrown forward with the invisible weight of our descent. The princess stumbles against the controls and catches my hand. She squeezes it tight, and our eyes meet. 1 second, two. The set is quiet. We're quiet. The stars, in all their mass and all their time, orbit us. She smiles timidly, and as Carmendor, I know she is the only star in the sky I care about. Red lights flare across all the screens. Warnings boom through the speakers. One more hit, and the Prospero will be space trash.
You know what I have to do, Arblen,
she whispers. No, I won't let you. I can't let you. There has to be another...
I hear the observation deck is nice this time of year, she tells me, and then she slips her hand out of mine and leaves the bridge.
Watching the show, this is where I scream at the TV, calling Carmendor stupid, because this is where the princess looks back at him. This is where she waits to see if he'll try to change her mind, waits for him to look back at her. But he doesn't know that he's supposed to look at her. He's trying to decide if his soul could survive killing his entire crew for the sake of the universe. If he'll be damned in the afterlife. If, in the next universe over, he'll get another chance. He looks back, a heartbeat too late, and she's already gone. I hold on to the scene, looking at the last place I saw her, the last place I'll ever see her. And then... Cut! Yells the AD. And that's a wrap! Calvin, pumps his fist into the air as the crew cheers so loud it rumbles the makeshift set. I lean back against the captain's command module and drop my head back, closing my eyes. I stand amid the triumphant hoots from the crew, the congratulations from the other actors. Relishing it all. You only get one shot, I remind myself, trying to hold on to as much of Carmendor as I can, just for a little longer. You sure had the spirit, comes Jess's sweet honey and salt voice. She hops back onto the set and punches me in the shoulder. You even looked torn when you said Ablena. Tell me. Were you thinking about not seeing me every day anymore? Or the absolute sadness that we didn't make out more? I slide on a grin, because she doesn't need to know. Maybe a little of both. My word, are you making jokes, Darian? She puts her hand on her chest, aghast. What a pity. Maybe we could have dated for 24 days instead of 23. You couldn't handle one more day of me, I reply, as she leans against the captain's command module with me. We stare out at the set, at the crew beginning to wrap up the wires, at the secondary unit getting notes on what they still need to film. Our parts are done in this building, at least. After tonight, we'll leave this lot and never look back. She knocks her shoulder against mine.
So... How does it feel?
How does what feel?
To be Darian again.
I tilt my head. I'm not sure yet. I've been waiting to feel like Carmendor for so long, waiting for it all to just sort of click, that I didn't realize I've been him all along.
Maybe you were Carmendor in another life, she teases.
Maybe. But right now, I'd rather be Darian.
Yeah?
I nod, because Darian is not on a diet. Then I lean into her and whisper,
Bacon.
She laughs and shoves off the control module, gliding off set. Calvin follows her, giving me a congratulatory slap on the shoulder that almost makes me stumble. Who knows? Maybe now that we're not filming, we're bros. The PAs are passing out champagne as I walk off set. One of them hands me a glass on her rotation around the room. Eamon, grinning ear to ear, shushes the crowd and does his little director speech. I listen half-heartedly to most of it, my attention roaming across everyone. Familiar and not. The crew, the actors, the assistants, the interns. Eamon turns to me, his glass raised. And most importantly, to our Carmendor, the infallible genius boy that he is. Long live the Federation, Prince. Here's to the possibility of a sequel. At that, I find Jess in the crowd and see that her face is impassive, like stone. But then she raises her cup, slowly, and locks eyes with me. Told you, she mouths and winks. Look to the stars, he begins to chant. Everyone raises their glasses. Aim, they cry. I swallow, raising my glass. Ignite, I add. And we cheer to the 23 days of hell, and then down our champagne. Once Donna rubs the makeup off me for the last time, I head to wardrobe, where Nikki is busily hanging all the costumes, treating them as delicately as he did the first day on set. Darian, you were perfect! Nikki shuffles up to begin unbuttoning my jacket, but I hold up my hands. Actually, I scratch the back of my neck. I know this is weird, but I was wondering... If you could have it, he fills in. He stops unbuttoning and folds his arms. You know, just because you wear it, it's not yours. I know. My cheeks get hot. I mean, I heard George Clooney got to keep his bat nipple suit, and Ryan Reynolds got to keep his Deadpool. Look, there's just this event coming up tomorrow, and I don't have anything to wear. So I guess I was sort of hoping you could let me borrow it, at least? And never return it? Nikki looks stricken. I half shrug, half nod, and Nikki rolls his eyes to the ceiling with a sigh. I'm not a part of this criminal act at all. He flaps his hands at me to go change. I must have misplaced your costume. Oh, woe is me. And with a groan, he throws his arm over his eyes in a fake swoon. I thank him, quietly, and promise to get it back to him in a week. Gail and Lonnie find me as I'm tugging on my shirt. I can't wait until my clothes start fitting normal again and aren't uncomfortably tight around the chest. I can't wait to go back to all the familiar comics t-shirts that don't fit me at this bulked-out size. Well? Gail says. How was it? How do you feel? I can eat bacon again, I yell, throwing up a fist. All the bacon. Bacon or bust. Yes, Gail cheers. After your promo shoots, you absolutely can. My cries of glee turn into an actual sob. I quickly shove my face into my arm. Thank God it's just Gail. She pats me on the shoulder. I know, she says, but you'll get to have it soon, and then... No, I swallow and shake my head, wiping my eyes with the back of my hand. It's not the bacon. I mean, it is, but it's also not. I'm overcome right now with everything. These last few months leading up to the shoot, the mounting pressure, the 23 days of high stress and rabbit food and L... All of it. Why does it have to be so hard? Getting a six-pack? I give her a feeble smile. I am more than my body, thank you. Gail squeezes my shoulder, and even though she's only a few years older than I am, I feel a burst of kid-like affection. like she's the cool babysitter who lets me stay up late when Mark's not around.
No, I know what you mean, she says. You've worked hard, Darian. You've worked so hard.
She looks at Lonnie as if she expects him to add something. Weirdly, he does.
You have, boss, he says. Now let's get moving.
5 minutes later, I'm out the trailer, costume rolled up in my duffel, and headed home. I follow Gail and Lonnie out of the lot, where an SUV is parked. Jess rolls down the front passenger window.
Dare, you coming? She shouts. We're partying.
We? I ask. The window behind her rolls down. It's Calvin. And for once, he doesn't look angry at me.
Come on, Carmendor. Don't wuss out on us now.
Maybe it's just the exhaustion-induced adrenaline rush, or maybe it's the thrill of finally having done something. But whatever it is, it's making me want to celebrate. But I can't just go anywhere. I glance at Gail and Lonnie, my de facto parents. Gail looks instantly worried, but Lonnie grabs her shoulder and whispers in her ear.
Okay, she says. We'll cover for you. Just this once.
I pump my fist into the air. Yes! I kiss her on the cheek. I love you, Gee.
Mm-hmm. Dare! Jess shouts again. We won't wait forever.
Seriously, Calvin says. Put on your big boy pants and hurry up.
But remember,
Gail digs into my duffel for a plain black hat and hands it to me.
If you show up on so much as a Snapchat tonight...
I know, Mark will kill me. I pull my hat low over my brow.
I'll be fine, Gee. You worry too m...
A ringtone cuts between our conversation like a knife. Gail and I exchange a look, but when she shrugs, saying it isn't hers, I dig into my hoodie pocket. All of my phone numbers have assigned ringtones, but this one is generic. The only person whom I never assigned a tone to is... L, the caller ID reads. My heart jumps into my throat.
Come on, Your Highness, Calvin shouts. Celebration time!
She's probably not actually calling me. It's probably a butt dial or something.
You gonna answer that? Gail asks.
Should I?
It rings for the third time. Fourth.
Come on! Jess echoes Calvin. You're only young once, Carmendor.
I hold up a finger and slide my phone unlocked. Hello? I wait 1 second. Two. Three. But there's no one there. And then the line goes dead.
Huh.
I pull the phone from my ear. Call ending.
Nothing?
Gail asks. I guess not. I hide my disappointment with a cough. Well, I promise I won't get into too much trouble.
Like I haven't heard that before.
Gail looks unconvinced, still staring at my phone. I tighten my grip on it and instantly feel stupid. Elle obviously doesn't want to talk right now. Besides, she'll be there tomorrow, and tonight's the only tonight I'm going to get. Here, I give the phone to Gail. So I can't make any underage drunk dials. Or Snapchats. Just don't lose it, or snoop through it. I add,
can I go now?
Gail nods, looking relieved as she pockets my phone.
All right.
I jog toward the SUV, the night air brisk and vibrant, leaving all the baggage of Starfield behind me, taking only the parts that I want to remember. The fit of a star gun in my grip. The power of standing at the helm of the Prospero. The nights talking with a girl who calls me Ablen. And leaving the rest of it behind.
L. C. Sage doesn't turn down the road to my house. The truck's way too loud. She stops at the entrance to the neighborhood as I loop my duffel over my head. 9:31 p.m. This is going to be one hell of a sprint.
What's the plan for tomorrow? She asks.
Meet you at the bus station? 6 a.m.?
6 it is.
She leans over and hugs me tightly. I return it.
Wish me luck!
I cry as I roll onto the pavement. All the houses are dark with sleep. I cut across lawns. The motion lights pop on as my feet thunder across dew-covered grass, my heart thrumming in my ears. I can't be late. I can't. Turning into our driveway, I realize with a wash of relief that Catherine's Miata isn't there. No one is home yet. What's today? Friday? Wait. Friday. Shopping day. Holy sweet, merciful credit cards, Batman! I slow down and creep around to the side, hoping I won't wake Giorgio as I climb up the creaky branches of the Bradford pear by my bedroom window. Halfway up, my foot slips. I curse, grappling onto another limb for support. I pause, making sure no one heard me, before climbing up the rest of the way. When I slide through my window, my knees go to jello and I sink to the ground, my heart still thundering in my ears. I made it. Relief wells up inside me. I curl my knees to my chest and press my forehead against them, trying to catch my breath. That was incredibly stupid. Tonight, of all nights. So stupid, I'm shaking. Because I'm so close. So close to going to ExcelsiCon. So close to my father, I can almost see him. Like a figure in the distant dusk. Just one more night, I tell myself. Just a few more hours. Then the lamp in my room flicks on. Startled, I glance up. My heart stops. Chloe is sitting in my computer chair, legs crossed, waiting patiently. Her gaze is so sharp it could cut glass.
Oh, look, she says coolly. You're home.
What are you doing in my room? She cocks her head.
Why are you sneaking into the house? Could it really be this late?
She mocks a look at her fake watch and tisks.
Oh my, it really is late.
Downstairs, the garage door opens and Catherine calls out that she's home.
Mom was with a client,
Chloe says simply. Which makes sense. The only explanation why Chloe would be home when Catherine isn't.
But it seems you made it just in time.
I don't understand. In time for what? She leans forward.
I know what you're trying to do, geek, she snaps. You think you were so smart, going behind my back. How do you think Mom will react when she finds out you've been hanging out with that freak after work? You've been lying to her after all she's done for you.
My mouth goes dry.
But you already knew that, and I said I wouldn't say anything if you didn't, and stop screwing with me,
she cries, slamming her hands on the chair's armrests.
Where is it?
I get to my feet, dumbfounded. Where's what?
You know exactly what, she snaps. You took it. You know you did, so where is it?
Where's what?
Don't play stupid!
She leaps out of the chair.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The dress, she hisses. I've never seen her so angry in my entire life.
Where did you put it?
What?
You think you can wear it? Don't make me laugh.
Then her eyes settle on the duffel bag slung by the bed. She leaps for it, and I quickly grab for the strap, not wanting to let it go. But she's too fast.
What's in here? She cries triumphantly. Stop it! It's not in there!
I lunge for the bag, but she jerks away, unzipping it. She grabs a fistful of cloth and yanks it out. I stand, horrified.
Oh God.
She knows. Now she knows. Her surprise quickly morphs into some sort of anger as she turns the fabric over in her hands.
Oh my God. Her eyes cut back to me. You were going to enter?
I don't... My throat constricts.
You were going to enter, and you took the other dress so we wouldn't win. Elias are like you. God, you really are pathetic. Something in me snaps. Maybe it was her calling me pathetic for wanting to enter, or that her claws clutch my father's jacket like it's a cheap Halloween costume. Or maybe it's her look of mockery, reminding me of that day last summer when I finally realized that people weren't nice, that no one was nice, that everyone lied, and that my heart was just a token, and this universe was the one in the black nebula. The hopeless, terrible universe. The one no one wants to be in. I rushed toward her, grabbing the collar of the jacket. Give it back. It's not yours. It's not yours either, Chloe replies, darting away from me. The collar slips from my grasp. This was in our house, so it's ours. Yours, I cry. None of this was ever yours. I grab hold of a sleeve and tug on it. Chloe repels against me, trying to wrench away. But something tears and comes off in my grip. At the sound, I drop the sleeve as if burned and stare down at it. No. No, 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 no. Ugh, Chloe mutters, dropping the jacket. Cheap garbage. I gather it up and press it against my chest, willing it back together. Wait a second. She spins around. If you were going to the contest, that means you have a pass, don't you? My blood goes cold. I'm shaking. Of course you do. She tears a poster off the wall and it comes down in scraps. Oops, not there. Or there. She adds as she knocks a frame off the hook and opens my drawers, dumping clothes onto the floor. I watch her, still shaking, still with my arms around myself because I don't want to let go of the jacket. My dad's beautiful, ruined jacket. Now where would you put it? Chloe turns full circle and then pauses on a poster. She glances at me as I pale, then back at the poster, and tears it off the wall. Behind it, tucked into the frame, are my con passes. I jump to my feet. Give those back, I snap. Or you'll do what? Run and tell Mom, she mocks. Just then she sees the worst of it. My savings, balled up in rubber band, and the bus tickets to Atlanta. What's this? Chloe sounds practically gleeful as she scoops up the tickets. Greyhound tickets? Gross. Oh, no. Oops. With one swift motion, she rips them in half. And then in half again, and again, and again, until the tickets, the non-refundable cash fare tickets that Sage and I were going to use tomorrow morning at 6:30 a.m., are a pile of confetti. This should do nicely. She takes the roll of bills and pockets it. We can just buy a better costume. Thanks. You can't. My voice cracks. You can't, or I'll... Or you'll what? Chloe sneers. Or I'll tell Catherine you're going to the con. She won't let you. I'll make sure she doesn't. I grip my dad's jacket tightly. I've never stood up to Chloe. I've never threatened her. Never in my life. And for a moment, she's shocked that I am. But then she blinks and her face falls into the dead-eyed look I know so well. How she looked last summer when she asked me why I thought James could ever like me. When she asked how I could have misinterpreted his kindness. When she made me out to be the freak. When the answers were always on the tip of my tongue. That's peanuts compared to this. That was the appetizer. Now she has my con passes. My savings. My mom's dress. She has to have my mom's dress. Who else would? Chloe has everything. She has everything I ever wanted. You'll do what? She says, stepping over the piles of clothes strewn across the floor. If you tell Mom, then so will I. How do you think she'd like hearing that her stepdaughter is hanging out with a druggie? Sage isn't, or that she's been skipping work. I haven't. And who would believe you? You're nothing, Danielle. You're nobody. You never will be. No stupid dress can change that. You'll always be the friendless weirdo whose daddy died. She shoves her free hand into my shoulder. I stumble backward, unable to catch my balance, and tumble onto my duffel bag. My duffel bag. Where nothing is left but the beautiful crown Sage made me. There was a loud, solid crack, and my heart stops. Chloe! Catherine calls up from the front door. Calliope! I'm home! Chloe smirks. Coming! She replies, flipping her hair behind her shoulder and leaves my room. Slowly, I pick myself up. But the damage is done. I don't need to open the bag to know what I'll find. I do anyway. The crown that Sage spent hours crafting lies in pieces at the bottom. I pick up a few and they crumble between my fingers. Bile rises in my throat. Outside my door, there's a padding sound of footsteps. I look up just as Cal peeks in.
Elle?
She asks timidly, and then gasps.
Oh my God, what happened?
I curl into myself. I wish the black nebula would eat me whole. I wish it would take me away. Hot tears burn as I squeeze my eyes closed, and then they gush down my cheeks. I just want to go away. I don't want to exist anymore.
Elle?
Get out. I tell her, my voice wavering. Get out of my room, Cal. For a moment she doesn't move, wanting to stay. To what? Watch as I break down? Does she get a kick out of it like her sister? But then she sinks away. It's all ruined. Everything is ruined. Just once I thought I could have something for me. Just once I thought... But I guess this universe doesn't have happily ever afters. I was stupid to think it could. I find myself reaching into my back pocket, taking out my phone. I close my eyes, holding it against my chest, afraid it'll be taken away too. Everything's taken away. Everything always is. Even Carmendor. It's past midnight. He might be asleep. I remember the way his voice sounded. Deep, but young. Weightless. Sweet. I wonder what it would sound like if he ever called me up Blenna aloud. That thought is what makes me tap the phone icon beside his number, put it to my ear as my heart races faster and faster, as the signal pings off a satellite far into space and sends McCall back down to Earth to the exact spot I wish I could be. His phone rings once, twice, a mayday out into this impossible universe, and then it goes to voicemail. A generic one without his voice, so it could be anyone's. He must be busy. Or asleep. I hang up and press the back of my head against the door, blinking back the tears to try to stop crying. We don't look up often, I remember texting. Maybe we should start. Only glow-in-the-dark stars whisper down to me, an imaginary constellation. It took Dad and me an entire weekend to hang them. Afterward, we stretched out on the floor and stared up at the ceiling, and he asked me, "Where do you want to go? Pick a star, any star. Then set your course. Aim." He pointed at a star. When I closed and pulled his thumb down as though he was firing a star gun, I stretched my hand to my destination, aiming with one hand, and falter. "Ignite," I hear my father say, even though he's not here and never will be again. Because this is the impossible universe. And there is no Carmendor. There is no Prospero, or UC, or the Federation, or observation decks. There's just me, stranded on the wrong side of everything that I love. Like Princess Amara, lost in the black nebula. Part 3.
ignite. You are not alone, Ablena, and your stars will guide me home. Episode 33, A Nox to Remember. L.
Now, girls, I want you to text me the moment you get to your tennis tournament.
Catherine smiles over the breakfast, eggs with spinach, that I made. I stand at the counter, sipping my coffee. I barely slept last night, and I'm not particularly hungry either.
Oh, of course, Chloe says pleasantly.
She throws me a look, as if to warn me to stay quiet. But the truth is, I've never been quieter. What's the use of ratting her out anyway?
And isn't Elle going to clean the carpets today?
Oh, that's right. My stepmother claps and turns to me.
Now, you know what to do, right? You won't leave the carpet sudsy like last time.
No, I reply, staring down into my cup. Chloe checks her phone.
Cal, we better hurry or we'll miss our ride. James will be here any minute.
Cal, who hasn't said a word all morning, hesitates.
I don't...
Catherine's tweezed brows pucker.
Are you feeling well, darling? You look a little pale. She's fine,
Chloe answers, and prods Cal up out of her seat.
She's just nervous, is all. Aren't you, Cal?
Cal steals a glance at me, then back down at her untouched plate of spinach and eggs.
Yeah.
I can't stand it anymore. I excuse myself to my room. A few minutes later, I watch James's car pull into the driveway and the twins hop in, taking my savings with them. My stepmother doesn't come to check on me. She just yells up to tell me the steam cleaner's in the garage and she'll see me tonight. Then the front door closes, and the steady hum of the Miata turns out of the driveway and down the street. After who knows how many minutes of lying on my bed, my phone buzzes in my pocket. I pull it out. Sage, 7:03 a.m.
Hey, where are you? I've been calling all morning.
7:04 a.m. I'm not going. I'm sorry. Sword points begin to sting in my eyes. I blink back hot tears. The first ExcelsiCon I remember was the year I turned 7. Dad had been going crazy planning it for the last 9 months of our lives. He spent so many sleepless nights arranging the panels, guest appearances, security detail, talking about the con in circles until I was so sick of hearing about ExcelsiCon that I didn't even want to go when it opened. That morning, I woke up to the sound of Dad playing the Starfield theme at full speaker volume. So loud it rattled the stuffed animals off my shelves. He swooped into my room in his starched coat and his crown, and he took me up in his arms, singing with tone-deaf accuracy.
Dun, 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 dun,
he howled, waltzing me around my room in my moon and stars pajamas. And it was the beginning of the best day of my life. When I got my star gun signed by Mr. Singh. When I first thought I could be Carmendor. When Dad told me,
Starlight, star bright, you can be anyone you want to be tonight.
Tears flood down before I can stop them. I wipe them away as quickly as they come with the back of my hand. But there's more. They won't stop. I'm crying so hard I can barely suck in a lungful of breath. Outside, something rumbles. Wiping my eyes, I stumble to the window. Out on the street, a large orange truck takes the corner tighter than Spider-Man's leotard, barreling down the one-lane road, a green-haired maniac at the wheel. Oh, no. When Sage bangs open the front door and stomps up to my bedroom, she finds me kneeling on the ground. My face in the crook of my arm because I don't want her to see me crying. I don't like anyone to see me cry. Not since Dad's death. Crying doesn't fix things. It doesn't bring anyone back.
Elle, it's okay. It's all okay. This'll be okay.
I shove away from her.
No, it won't.
I take one look at the crumpled crown and the torn jacket and start crying harder.
They thought I stole the dress. My own mother's dress. So they took my money and ruined my... our...
Sage falls to her knees and tries to hug me, but I push her away.
Don't, I say. Get away from me. I'm weird and horrible and I ruin everything. Catherine's alive. The twins. I'll ruin your life, too. I haven't yet, but you just wait.
She scoffs. Elle, you can't ruin someone else's life. Are you nuts? They're the ones who wrecked your stuff. Sage studies me for a long moment, rocking back on her heels. Why would you ever think you're the one who ruins things?
I laugh a small, thin laugh. Because I'm just a burden. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be part of this. I'm not Carmendor Sage, I admit, hiccuping. I couldn't be. I'm the Black Nebula. I'm Princess Amara. And I destroy everything I touch.
She sits back. Okay, then.
Okay, what? She sounds way too calm. Don't you get it? This is it, Sage. This is the end of it. I don't get good things in this life. None of it.
I don't believe that. Sage stands up and reaches out to help me up, too. Come on. Her hand hovers, outstretched, waiting for me to take it. I hesitate, looking up at it, wondering what she sees in me as a friend. Why she doesn't get it. Can't she understand?
Why?
I say at last. Because you're right. You aren't Carmendor. You're Amara. And you know why you are? Because you've taken a crappy subplot and managed to live through it. And you are selfless and you're brave. She squats and takes me by the shoulders. Elle, when I watched the last episode, I didn't think Amara destroyed anything. She saved the universe.
Carmendor saved the universe. All she did was die.
I thought you said there was another universe on the other side.
Doesn't matter, I snap back. I couldn't be Amara if I wanted to. The twins lost Mom's dress and...
A lump forms in my throat. Sage rubs the back of her neck. Well, they didn't exactly lose it.
What do you mean?
I have a confession to make, Sage says slowly. I took the dress.
You?
The realization begins to dawn on me. You took it? Yeah. When I said I was taking Franco out to pee that day, she looks ashamed and proud at the same time. I didn't think your stepsisters would wig out like that. I'm so sorry. I couldn't stand the thought of those snotty girls wearing your mother's things. I couldn't do it. And I'll understand if you hate me for life because of it, and... I sling my arms around her and bury my face into her shoulder.
Thank you,
I sob.
Thank you. Thank you.
You aren't mad?
I wanted to steal it myself, but I couldn't. I didn't know how. I was furious, but I couldn't do anything.
But Chloe took your tickets. She took your savings because I took the dress. I nod.
She would have taken those anyway.
I know she would have.
Okay.
She laughs nervously and stands, outstretching her hand. I take it, and she pulls me to my feet. She squeezes my hand.
Now let's get to that con, yeah? We're burning daylight just standing around.
But how are we getting there? The bus left and
we'll take the pumpkin.
I gape. Are you serious? We can't take the pumpkin. Your mom would flip. One more parking ticket and
desperate times, girlfriend. Desperate measures. I'll deal with her once I get home. Now get your things. We're going on a road trip.
But we don't have money. Or passes.
We'll figure it out as we go. Come on, Bilbo, where's your sense of adventure?
You're crazy.
She wiggles her eyebrows.
I know.
Drying my eyes, I gather my costume into my duffel bag, leaving the broken crown abandoned in the middle of my room, and hurry down the stairs. Sage throws open the back hatch of the truck, and there, hanging from the roof, is Mom's dress. I stare with unabashed awe.
Okay, she says. If you want me to fix this up for you to wear it, you're gonna have to drive.
She tosses me the keys and digs out a small sewing set from her satchel.
Wait, what?
I catch the keys.
You,
she replies, closing the truck doors and rounds to the passenger side.
Driving. You know how to get to Atlanta, right?
Me? I sprint around to the other side and take a running leap into the truck, half expecting Catherine's Miata to come rolling down the street. I buckle up, inserting the key into the ignition. The speedometer and all the little buttons and dials loom in front of me like a complicated control panel.
I barely know how to drive.
You said you had a license.
That doesn't mean I practice.
Then you can learn, she replies, taking my bag. We got 4 hours, half a tank of gas, and a contest to slay. So tell me, are you ready to hijack the Pumpkin Princess?
Sage grins her wild grin, and there's no way I can say no. I just can't.
Aye, co-pilot.
She grins bigger and flips down her Ray-Bans. I follow suit, positioning my cheap aviator knockoffs to hide my red-rimmed eyes. I give the key a turn in the ignition. The engine rumbles to life like a beast waking from hibernation, and the Pumpkin coasts out of the driveway and down the road, black smoke belching from the tailpipe.
Darian. It'll never be the right blue, I mutter to myself, straightening the collar. The uniform is hanging on a peg in a closed-off room at the convention center. I thought that after 23 days of filming in it, I would be utterly sick of this costume, but it feels wrong not wearing it now, like a second skin. I run my fingers along the brass buttons and polished star wings. Gail had the tailcoat starched this morning as I nursed a cup of coffee. I can't remember how late I stayed up, but it was well after I dragged my co-star's drunk, happy asses back to the hotel.
You're such a good catch,
Jess had slurred in the back of Lonnie's black car. As it turns out, having a bodyguard does come with perks, and those perks involve having on-call limo service all the time. Lonnie was not happy.
That girl's crazy not to see it.
What girl? Calvin asked, lying face down across the other seat.
The one Darian's in love with.
I'm not, I argued. But Jess pressed a drunk finger against my lips.
Shh,
she commanded, and promptly puked on my shoes. I threw them away in the lobby, trying to avoid Lonnie's death stare for the rest of the evening as we corralled co-stars back to their rooms. There's a knock on the door a moment before Gail lets herself inside. You ready, Dare? I run a hand nervously through my hair. Sure thing. Any sign of my phone? She shakes her head. As soon as I got back to my room, well, as soon as I'd gotten back and wiped the remains of Jess's barf off me, Gail had broken the bad news. My phone was missing.
I have no idea where I could have put it, she gushes for the millionth time. I even tried calling the number, but it goes straight to voicemail. I'm sorry. I know you said...
We'll find it, I tell her, with more certainty than I feel.
Right. We will.
She takes me by the elbow, knowing I won't move until I'm prompted to, and leads me down the hallway and past the green room, the only place where the con's guests can sit around without being constantly asked for autographs or selfies. Even veterans sit in there more often than not. No one goes out onto the con. It's an aquarium full of piranhas. It's the epicenter of this universe's black nebula. As the green room door disappears behind us, I give it one last forlorn glance when a guy with thick brown hair and an even browner coat catches my eye. Gale! I skid to a stop. I think I see Nathan F... Gale yanks me toward her like a yo-yo. You can get him to sign your first edition Firefly comic later. After your panel and your signing. I dig my heels into the carpet. Signing? Gale cringes and tugs at her ponytail. It was Mark's orders. Mark's? I strangle his name out. My dad said I had to. He insists. He says it'll be good publicity. He says you need it. I tried to argue with him, but... What if that blogger's here? The one who left the messages? We don't know if it's the same person, she points out. Oh, so what if they're both here? Either of them could have a ticket for my life. I'm sorry, Gale repeats. And instantly my fear turns to regret, and my shoulders slump. The brown coat in the green room is gone. Another missed opportunity. I shake my head. No, it's not your fault. You can't go against Mark. Maybe the con office can do something. I'll handle it. But dare... I'll handle it. At the end of the hallway, I throw open the doors and make my way through the crowded con, Gale clawing through the sea of people behind me. I refuse to pause for selfies or autographs or anything because I'm on a mission. First, Mark makes me do the con. Then he blames me for all the weird leaks that have been happening. And now he won't let me cancel a signing? And no Orange Crush soda? I've had it up to my eyebrows with things out of my control. Mark can kiss it. I am not going to sign.
L. The Atlanta Convention Center is huge. Sage lets me off at the front to go find us badges while she finds out where to park the pumpkin. It sputters away as I gape at all the people. There are so many people. Not just people, but Vulcans, and Nox, and Turians, and Sith Lords, Groots, X-Men, Jon Snows, Marty McFlys, Disney princesses, Nathaniel Drakes and Indiana Joneses, Dota 2 avatars beside League of Legends characters, brown coats and hero capes and Hogwarts cloaks, Sailor Moons and Sailors of Stars and Trekkies and swarming among them all, and coats the perfect navy blue, the sign of the esteemed Federation, are the Star Gunners, the impossible world. And even better, no sign of the twins. 12:22 p.m. You would not guess where I am right now, Ablen. One photo attachment. I wait for him to respond, because I think he's here too. Probably talking on one of the cosplay panels. But he doesn't respond. At least not at first. He will when he sees it. But will he want to meet up? Do I want to? I think I do. Determined, I hike my duffel bag higher onto my shoulder and embark on my quest to commandeer a ticket. Bored-looking guy is the only one left at the ticket table. A fat red sign reading, Saturday passes sold out, hanging overhead. I take a deep breath and march right up. Look, I'm not trying to get a new pass, it's just that my old ones were stolen, I explain to the ticket guy. All I want is to enter into the cosplay competition. I promise I won't pass go, collect 200, what have you, he points to the sign. No, I know what it says. I can read, I say. I'm just asking if I can...
get special treatment,
he says, finally looking up at me.